So, Gerd, why don't we'll start chronologically and then spiral off on digressions as they come up.
Yeah, you understand that was taped, and there probably were problems with some sequence or whatever, but I don't care. I'll talk about anything, and it doesn't, you know.
Right.
You just stop me when you want to.
Okay. Now, the original thing, are those tapes available?
Yeah, they actually were eventually going to put them online. I don't know if they ever did.
Right.
I don't think so.
Right, so that starts, it looks like, April 14th, so, you know, 12 years ago.
And well, it was about 6 or 8 sessions altogether.
In 96?
Yeah, approximately 96.
Yeah. Okay. It says here, the little symbol. This symbol indicates that a tape or tape segment has begun or ended. A guide to the tapes follows the transcript. So they're implying there's tapes there or something.
Yes. Well, I have copies of the tapes which they gave me on cassette. I don't know if those are copies of the originals, actually. And my daughter wanted me to put them on CDs. There are about 50 of them at least, so it's quite a job.
Yeah. So they're little cassette tapes you have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know how to do it, but, you know, having the time is another thing.
Right. Now, lots of change in the last 12 years.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, in the world and in your life. So it's,
yes, I definitely in the world also. I meant in my life.
Yeah, so...
I can't even remember exactly when that was.
Right, that... You mean the interview?
No, I don't remember the exact moment in my time, in my life. I remember it was in California.
Right.
All the recordings were done in California.
And it seems to be done in Mount Tamalpais. Near
well,
there.
Tamalpais.
Tamalpais
is the mountain near Mill Valley, California, in Marin County, which is where my daughter lives, and it was most of them were done in her house. Yeah.
And the woman who interviewed you, this is not on tape, the woman who interviewed you seemed to know some of these people or something like a familiarity.
Well, unfortunately, she's a feminist professor.
Yeah.
And she didn't even know who Thomas Mann was. Take that.
But so was she maybe in
no, her big comment to me was, you know, I've done a lot of this oral history, and usually I have to ask a lot of questions, but you just keep on talking. That's wonderful.
Yeah, she doesn't get to say much. And is she like being her 50s now?
Yeah, about that, maybe late 40s, 50s, yeah. She adopted a little Asian girl. She's a single mother, right about a year or two after she did these.
Right.
And I think she's got tenure at San Jose State.
And she was at the Beat Conference. Is that how you met her, or was it your interview?
No, she wasn't at the Beat Conference. Oh. Well, I'll tell you the way I met her. She did the oral history of Shirley Trieste. Shirley Trieste was an old friend of mine.
And Frank Trieste. I remember the name Frank, right? Frank Trieste?
Frank Trieste was Shirley's husband's brother. Frank Trieste was at KBFA. Right?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Yes, her husband... I mean, they were anarchists.
Yeah.
And she was a great painter. She worked on the Coit Tower project. I have a sketch for a mural of hers that she did of the Black Panthers and Martin Luther King. I mean, she really was very talented. They lived up in Duncan's Mills, which is up in little town where Lou Hill, who, you know, the guy who put KBFA together, lived.
Yeah. In Russian River.
But I knew the Trieste long before I knew Lou.
So this woman was a friend of Shirley, you're saying?
No, Shirley was the woman.
No, but the Byerly.
She wasn't a friend. She was the oral historian who did the Shirley's oral history. Shirley was an important artist, part of the thing which was called poets, artists, and radicals. Right.
Right.
So she was a radical and an artist, and they interviewed me for that oral history. Because Shirley had died already.
Oh, I see.
They had recorded Shirley, but they also recorded her friends about her, including me. And then this woman said to me, you know, you're even more interesting than Shirley. We should do you. And then they had to find the money. And they did.
Yeah, well, what is the beat? Is there a beat conference happening around the time of these interviews? Because you referred to some beat conference in La Mancha reading Hoffman or something. La Mancha.
Wait a minute. That's the famous reading at the Six Gallery, which was in the 60s when Philip read John Hoffman's poetry, but it's that same night that Alan read Howl for the first time.
Right, that's about 55.
That wasn't a conference, it was a reading.
All right, well, was there a beat conference around 96? Because there seems to be a reference to it.
Well, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, yeah, it was at the University of California in Berkeley. There was a bunch of readings. I'm not sure it was a conference, but, I mean, Larry read, I think David Meltzer. I can't remember who else. I have the program somewhere in my archive because I was there.
Right. And that's what you're referring to because it seemed that she was there and you would...
Yeah, she was there.
Yeah. Just...
She was attached to Rojo at that time. The rural... which is who did the oral history.
Right. Okay, just so when we get, and since you were a little vague on the dates you say in that interview, I'll have the wiki to supplement us. Just to focus, it's October 7th, 55 is the Sixth Gallery reading where he did Howl. 1955.
October 7th, what?
1955.
Really? 1955?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I believe it.
Yeah, it said, the event, and this is what Wiki says, the event, in essence, brought together the East and West Coast factions of the Beat Generation. Of more personal significance to Ginsberg, this is the Wiki on Ginsberg, that night was the first public reading of Howl.
True.
Yeah. So, all right, so how's it going, Scott? Are you ready?
Sure.
All right, so today is June 22nd. Good day. Is that you making the noise? Scott?
Yeah, I'm just getting back over here and my office and ready to go.
Okay. All right, so it's 3:16.